Iambic Audiobooks presents Sweet and Lowdown by Lisa McClendon. Read by Mark Douglas Nelson. Chapter 1, 1940. Who are you?
Your new patrol officer, Wilma Vanell. Please take a seat.
What happened to Lloyd?
Reassigned. Take a seat, Miss Lennox. Y'all are staying, aren't you?
Do I have a choice?
Mr. Francis didn't make very many notes. Did you talk to him?
What else is there to do in here?
Where did he go?
That's not the business of this meeting, Miss Lennox.
We're here to discuss your staying out of trouble and having employment.
Done both. Can I go?
Sit down. We have a half hour. I don't know how Mr. Francis worked, but I fill my sessions. We talk about how things are going, the job, the family, problems you might be having.
I'm not having any problems. Who told you that?
I see you're a private detective, and you've been ordered not to have any weapon or instrument that could be used as a weapon on your person. Is that a problem for you?
Look, Mrs. Vanell, I'm a widow.
Okay, Mrs. Vanell, it is a problem. I could get hurt on the job. Jumped, dry-gulched. It's happened. There are mean and careless geese out there.
Geese?
Fellas, tough's too slippery for your boys in blue. And they're using things more hurtful than my switchblade, you can bet on that.
Are you saying you have gotten yourself a gun?
I'm on parole, remember?
Have you used a gun in the last 5 months?
No.
Are you sure about that?
I'd know, wouldn't I?
I could tell you anything, Mrs. Vanell the widow, and you got no choice but to believe it. So why don't you just let me go on my merry way and you can go get another piece of pecan pie?
Does this questioning make you angry?
Hell yes, it's a waste of time.
Wasting time is a bad thing.
Oh, sure, you work for the government.
Light bulb, Mrs. Vanell, the clock is ticking. You won't be around forever.
Neither will you, Miss Lennox.
The widow took a long moment to brush imaginary dust from her desk pad.
What do you plan to do with your life?
I plan to live it, outside of these four walls. I plan to...
What is it?
Nothing. My eye. You know, Mrs. Vanell, I'm not afraid to die. I've seen people die, and it's not so bad. All their troubles are gone, and they don't have to worry about their families anymore, where next month's rent is coming from, or dying in some stinkhole in France. It's peaceful. Don't look at me like that. I'm not going to do the Dutch act. I've seen that too, and it's not for me.
You've seen a lot.
It's my job. That's why I need my blade, to protect myself.
All this dying, was it all on the job?
Some family, like everybody.
Were you there when Mr. Vanell died?
No, he was far away in the war.
Same with me. They died, and I wasn't there.
You didn't get to say goodbye.
Lennox stared at the woman's face, still as pasty and block-like as at the beginning of the session, eyes sunken deep in her flesh, cold and unwavering, probing and examining like icy needles.
Dory looked away, over Vanell's shoulder.
Didn't get to say goodbye.
She jumped to her feet, face hot, and turned her back to the parole officer.
Is the time up? I have to be somewhere.
Sit down, please. We've got 15 minutes, and I want to hear about the assault and battery charge that brought you here.
Mr. Francis doesn't mention it.
He knew better.
Was he afraid of you?
He had the shakes.
Was it me who gave him to him?
I don't know. I liked him better than you, though.
I'd like you better if you tell me what happened that day.
And I should care about your opinion.
You might, if you want to stay out of jail.
Dory Lennox stood in the smoky haze of the nightclub. The air was warm, curling around the ankles.
There it was, just for a second. A calm pause in the relentless clicking of the clock. A feeling of tenuous perfection, that everything was just where it was supposed to be. She shivered, and it was gone. Untrustworthy feeling, cockeyed, in the way only your imagination can trick you. Back in Atchison, in the Speaks, she'd felt that way. But that was another life. This one was dented and bruised, and it wasn't so tender anymore. And that was good, she told herself. She was so tough. Another necessary lie. Life was full of them. She lighted a Lucky and leaned against the wall by the ladies' lounge. She'd seen the inside of too many nightclubs. In the dark, where anything can happen, and usually did. Closed away, secret, the daytime world forgotten, with its rules and laws and shaking fingers. Easy to pretend to get lost. To forget who you were and what you wanted. Easy to get sidetracked. The band crashed to a finale. The discordant notes of an unrecognizable tune collapsed into the smoky stillness. You belong here. The thought crept up like a poisonous snake. That was the feeling. That these dark places belonged to her, and she to them. Was that just a lie to make this life seem normal? Or was it such an outrageous lie that it had become true? The girl stood up suddenly with a peal of laughter, twirled for the gents at her table, and bent to peck the cheek of one. Then she sashayed toward Dorry in her scarlet shift, tossing her hair back. She looked up, her eyes a curious brown, but cold and accusing. Lennox moved aside to let her through the doorway, then sat down at the table across from Amos Haddam. She shouldn't have ordered the whiskey. She pushed it away. Amos fingered his glass unconsciously, turning the untouched gin round and round. "She's behaving herself tonight, as much as she can." Amos looked up as the girl maneuvered between the empty tables, back to her gents. He regarded her coldly, from a distance, like the job she was, not as the wayward woman-child she appeared to other men. "They want me to register for this draft," he said.
"You?"
He straightened his bony shoulders and faked a smile full of teeth, but no mirth. His face was as gray as the air in here.
"You a U.S. citizen?" she asked.
"Jolly right. Had to swear on the big black Bible back in my revenue days. Pinching moonshiners was patriotic work."
As if to demonstrate, he picked up his glass and put it to his lips. He paused, something shifting in his eyes. He lowered the glass, still full, to the tabletop.
"Well, don't worry. You won't pass the physical."
Her words were harsher than she meant.
"Besides, one war is enough."
He raised his eyebrows.
"I..."
He took a sip, then anger at the war or the liquor hardened his eyes. He shot the rest back in one gulp. She waited for him to keel over. Instead, he stood up.
"Gotta clear the lungs of this bloody smoke."
She watched him go, then splashed the whiskey against her lips. The taste was sweet on her tongue. The girl, Thalia, was dancing now with the skinny Guy. He was grinning at her, all his bad teeth showing. Thalia Hines had the worst taste in men. Dorry had watched this week as she was pawed by the greasy-gummed, flop-eared, gap-toothed and pigeon-toed, the chubby, bony, bald and smelly. Thalia had been seen, dancing and drinking and singing, with dozens of men. And worse yet, she appeared to enjoy their attentions. A man approached Lennox's table, dressed decent, but with a dirty neck and one misbehaving eye. He asked her to dance. She smiled politely. "Waiting for a friend," she said. She had to keep an eye on the girl. Thalia had proved mostly easy, since she was aware they were tailing her for the commander. But that could turn in the blink of an eyelash. The man gave her a harsh look. Dorry gave him one back. The music changed. Thali was being persuaded to sing by the skinny Gi. She shook her head as if she were shy. Her chin dipped. Then she leaned against the piano, whispered to the band, and began to sing. A cheery party song. What was it? From a play, a nondescript musical she barely remembered. She'd gone with Talbot. She remembered that. Harvey Talbot, Randy reporter, last seen months ago. Not that she missed him. It had just been, well, a dry summer. Thalia's voice was throaty and tuneless, like Marlena Dietrich's in the movies. Her creamy skin and yellow hair glowed in the spotlight. Amos appeared at the top of the stairs, looking flushed. His hair stood up with wax, freshly combed. He flagged down a waitress and asked for a water and a gin. When it came, he drank all the water. The telephone rang behind the bar, and the bartender answered it. Dory looked at her watch. Only 11 o'clock. "Why don't you go home? I can follow her," she said. Her eyes were clear enough, only slightly bloodshot. "Not just following, is it?" "What's she gonna do?" "It's not her I'm worried about." Whether Amos could bully any of these boozers wasn't in doubt, but she worried about a real fight. Amos was hardly a prize fighter. Bad breath would knock him flat. He hadn't mentioned his gun, and Dory under orders to be easy pickings. The parole officer's words this afternoon irked her. Mrs. Vanel, what did she know about street life? She sat there so calm and all-knowing, like a fat Chinese Buddha. The weeks at the gym had made Dory quicker, lighter on her feet. Her knee felt stronger than it had in years. But still, she was naked without her blade. She patted the empty pocket of the blue suit and sighed. The suit had been worn only once that summer, at the funeral of a bachelor at the boarding house. Sad, really, how little they missed him, a nondescript shadow of a man. He'd gone suddenly, something about his guts. Everyone picked at their food for a week until Mrs. Ferrazzi burst into tears. They had all felt bad about the bachelor, but it was a relief to go back to Poppy's scalloped potatoes and corned beef hash. Thalia was doing a shimmy as the song ended, running her hands down her hips. Her thin red dress barely concealed her figure. The skinny fella reached for her hand and pulled her down for a peck on the lips. The way men reached for Thalia, the way she responded so eagerly, so gratefully, it grated on Dory. Made her feel hollow and edgy. She picked up her glass and took a gulp of whiskey. She knew what it was. That dry summer again. As the music ended, the girl tossed back her hair, a corn-tassel blonde, and smiled her pussycat smile as the men clapped and whistled. This went on for a long minute, until Thalia looked toward the door. She straightened, her smile fading. The man standing at the back of the room was dressed in a somber gray suit and a darker shirt, which made him look solid, like granite. His hair was also dark and slick. The expression on his moderately handsome face was pure fury. His eyes blazed at the girl, nostrils flaring. His chest rose and fell as if he was barely containing himself. Then, suddenly but deliberately, he took a deep breath and unclenched his fists. He smiled and said her name. "Who's that?" Dory whispered. Amos hitched his shoulders. The man looked as hard as the neighborhood Italians, but different. Fairer complexion, slighter build, slender hands. Irish hood or politician, or both. Thalia was heading toward him, pausing for her clutch and jacket at the table. The man who had been buying her drinks grabbed her wrist, but she shook him off, complaining in her mewing way. The man at the door took her jacket, turned her around, and helped her into it. He smoothed back her hair from her face and took her arm. "Let's go," Amos said, on his feet. By the time they were down the stairs and out on the sidewalk in the cool October air, the girl was in the back seat of a light green sedan. The man climbed in next to her. A driver in a cap sat at the wheel. Amos took off toward their car. The skirt of the blue suit was too tight to run in, a liability Dory had not tested until now. Amos turned to hurry her. She hiked up the skirt, but it was awkward with only the bottom half of her legs working. The Packard was half a block down, near the skinny man's Pontiac. "Shake a leg," Amos said as he slipped behind the wheel, fishing her keys from her handbag at the same time. "They're around the bleeding corner already. I thought you were a track star. Never saw anybody waddle so slow. Me first, with lungs so damp they could fill a fish tank." Damn blue suit. She concentrated on making the turn, avoiding two large coupes on Holmes. The green sedan was up ahead, turning left onto Grand. The night was clear and starry, with little traffic. She felt her mind snap and the corners of her mouth turn up. This was why she liked this job, the jolts of adventure. You paid in hours of tedium, but it was worth it. At least they'd been at it together. The girl would look at them, smile, stick out her pink tongue. She'd thumb her nose and laugh. She'd wiggle her fanny to Amos. She was hardly inhibited by their presence. The commander's wishes had little effect on the girl. Girl? Thalia Hines was 21, and, as she enjoyed pointing out, had reached her legal majority. Between them, they'd had a few dull nights watching the girl drink and carouse and go home with, was this number 4 or 5? She'd stayed in one night in the last 8. "There, right," Amos said, pointing at a dark intersection where the sedan had disappeared. "Step on it or we'll lose them." Dory downshifted and made the turn in time to see the sedan turn left at the bottom of a hill. "Are they trying to shake us?" The side street was lined with trees and hedges, shielding the view of the houses beyond. At gaps in the shrubbery, mansions peeked through, brick, Tudor, stately and rich. The kind of people who have chauffeurs and big green sedans. Like Thalia. But this wasn't her neighborhood. The car disappeared into a driveway. "Park there." He pointed out a spot under a large tree drooping gracefully over the narrow street. "Douse the lights." She cut the engine and lights and rolled to a stop under the tree. Leaves crunched under the tires. The tree held on to its weathered foliage, making the spot shadowed and cold. A house was obscured by more trees and shrubs, but a sliver of lawn stretched out in golden streaks of lamplight. "This it?" "Next one down. Go check the gate. See if there's a name. Stay in the shadows. These neighborhoods have a thousand eyes." She pried open the car door as quietly as she could. Amos frowned at her. "Give me that jacket." He held out a hand impatiently until she stripped it off and handed it to him. The door creaked noisily, and she left it ajar. Tiptoeing across the pavement and into the grass, she stuck to the shadows, working her way to the first driveway, a long, snaky strip of blacktop. She shivered in the thin navy shell, her summer tan faded from her arms. She skipped into the next batch of shadow. The air smelled of leaf mold and wood smoke. The bark on the trees rippled roughly under her hand. The house squatted on the front lawn, visible through the trees, a low-slung modern building, windows lit up from inside. Framed against the glass, Thalia stood next to a sofa, across from the man. He gestured, jaw flapping, pointing at her. He walked in a circle, agitated, then pulled the drapes shut with a jerk. Dory took off her shoes. The ground, laced with roots, was bumpy through her thin socks. The night was dark and moonless. Heartless, she thought, like Thalia, honey. She looked back at the car. Amos was smoking a forbidden cigarette. Why did he tempt fate like that? She reached the driveway, weathered and potholed brick. There must have been another, older house here once. This one couldn't have been 5 years old. She peered down the drive, but saw nothing but blackness beyond the modern house. On either side of the driveway sat crumbling brick columns topped with limestone. The left one listed to the south. She squinted at a metal plaque. 101. The house was only 20 yards away. Amos was still smoking. She stuck her shoes under one arm, dashed along the shadows of trees, bouncing from one to another until she was on the narrow porch. Inside, voices. The man's loud and strident, then Thalia's, low and soft. In the shadows of the porch, she felt for the mailbox. There was the doorknob. She felt the box and put her face right up to an ordinary mailbox hanging by the door. No name on it. The voices stopped. Maybe they'd moved into the kitchen, or the bedroom, or maybe they were making up. Easing the lid up, she felt inside the mailbox. There were two letters. Holding the lid open, she tried to read them in the dim light. But it was too dark, even with the dull glow through the curtains. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. She chose the smaller of the two, dropped the other back inside, and set the lid down silently. In seconds, she was back in the car. Amos had the window open. "See anything?" She pulled the letter from her pocket. Breathless from her run, another waddle in the tight skirt, this time in damp socks. She wiggled back into her shoes. "From the mailbox? I never." He stared at it. "This is going out." "To who?" Amos slipped a fingernail under the flap and tore it open. He pulled out a small piece of stationery and unfolded it. "Turn on the lamp." Lennox flicked on the dome light. "What's it say?" "Bloody thank you note. On church stationery." "Can I see it?" She took the card. "Dear Mrs. Morgan, the blessings of the Creator and all His sheep on you for your generous contribution to the Chorus Fund. Please allow me to show my gratitude in person at your earliest convenience. Call me on my private line at Hancock 71122. I look forward to speaking to you very soon. Your servant, B. Wake." "Turn off the lamp. Somebody'll call the cops." The front of the card had a gold crest with— Amos snapped off the light. "What church is it?"
"One of those big ones down on the plaza."
"Do you know this Wake?"
"Not yet."
Amos coughed and rolled up the window.
"You want to snooze first?"
She put the card back in the envelope and set it on the seat between them. "How long are we staying?"
"As long as it takes."
A car passed on the street very fast. They didn't have time to duck. She ran her hands over the steering wheel. "Can I put my jacket back on?" Amos looked out the back at the passing car. She slipped her cold arms into the jacket, buttoning it up. Sometimes Amos would play word games, or tell her stories about England before the war, the first one, but it didn't seem likely tonight. He'd been subdued all week, quiet, as if waiting for something to happen, a letter to come, a draft notice, a telegram. A bundle of waiting, twitching, and sneaking cigarettes and rubbing his bloodshot eyes.
"Did you check the mail before you left?" Amos asked suddenly.
"Expecting something?" He shrugged.
"From England? Nothing yet?"
Amos tightened his jaw and squinted into the dark street. The Blitzkrieg, the Blitz for short, they were calling it. Nightly German raids, shelling London. It had been going on most of the summer, and now, in October, good news was hard to come by. His mother refused to leave. At least, that was what she said in her last letter, a month or more before. "But that's good news. No news and all that."
"Some truth to that. Almost fainted today when I saw a Western Union boy in the neighborhood."
"She's too busy to write. Helping people." They sat silently for half an hour, neither close to sleep nor particularly alert either. Dory had nothing and everything on her mind. Blue suits and naughty girls, Roosevelt and Wilkie, airplanes and bum knees, Hitler and Mussolini. The news these days kept them all thinking, wondering, worrying. She had worried about these long stakeouts, waiting for Thalia to finish her dallying around, worried that the time would be hard on her, that she would think too much about the past and things she could never change. She spent the summer checking out reckless spouses and would-be soldiers and corrupt accountants. No time to think about herself. The stakeouts hadn't turned out to be so bad. Amos seemed more worried about the future than fixed on the past. None of the things that haunted her last year had come to bear. No dreams, no voices, not even longing for male companionship. The work kept her sane, she was sure of that. Even with parole and all those indignities, she had her work. She let her head rest on the back of the seat and sighed. Would it last?
"The third-termers make you sigh like that?"
"What?"
"The ones what think giving Franklin a third term is making him our own Hitler. You've heard about them."
"Be hard not to. That parade last week went right by the office, with the elephants from the zoo draped with huge signs, 'No Third Term.'"
Amos chuckled.
"If Rilke only knew the huge Republican road apples them elephants leave behind."
"I hear Wilkie leaves them too. Giant turds, everywhere he goes."
Amos erupted again, laughing and coughing, then wiped his eyes.
"Sweet Jesus, I'm going to wake the dead."
"You shouldn't be smoking."
"You think anything can hurt lungs like mine?"
"Want another?"
He looked tempted, but shook his head.
"Too much racket."
They were quiet again, another half hour. She lit a cigarette and checked her watch. It was nearly 1 o'clock. Amos slumped in his seat, pulled his hat down, and closed his eyes.
"Short one. Wake me in 10, he said.
The patrol car stopped next to them 20 minutes later. Amos was still dozing. Dory rolled down her window.
"Move along," the cop said, shining his flashlight in her eyes, then on Amos.
"Is he drunk?"
"No, sir, just tired."
The cop's light moved down her neck and arm, then back to her face.
"What's your name?"
"Am I doing something illegal, officer?"
Amos woke up with a snort, his hat falling forward over his face.
"Oh, I'd be willing to bet on it. We got laws against your kind."
"My kind?"
She batted her eyelashes at the cop.
He was a blockhead, with cropped hair and brains to match.
Her voice sweetened, like she just swum in a peach cobbler. She gasped, then giggled.
"You don't think I'm that kind of a girl, do you? Really, I am quite flattered, officer."
Amos leaned down to peer at the cop.
"Thank you, sir. We'll be getting along now."
The policeman stared at them for a moment, grumbled a few words, then rolled up his window and drove off. He stopped at the corner and waited for them to leave.
"Wordplay gets you nowhere with that type," Amos chided. "Look smart."
"Leave Thalia here?"
"We've been rousted."
"What'll we tell the commander?"
"Turn the key, girl. We're busted."